Good evening. Well, here it is, already over a week into the new year. And, you know, if I would have thought when I was a kid I had to wait for a whole year for something, man, I'd have felt like that was an eternity, you know. But I know better than that now. I know that here before too much longer, January will be over, and you know, it'll probably seem like forever, but the snow's eventually going to melt. I'm ready for it too, anyway. But you know, then summer will come and go, and my kids will be a year older. And we'll be looking at the next new year. And if you don't think that that's going to go by that fast, just think about, you know, how far it was since the beginning of 2022. Dude, I've been here in Coeur d'Alene now almost 8 years, and feels like I just got here almost. My kids have up more than doubled in size, at least one of them. The other one is due for a growth spurt any day now. But time passes by, you know, and life gets in our way too. I really liked the story that Steve told this morning. About how he had that important court date, and you know, just living life, he forgot to show up for it, and you know, fortunately for him, he had insurance, and that wasn't too big of a deal, not a life-changing deal, but you know, I guarantee you that that power company was glad he didn't show up that day. And there's a lot of people in this world that want us to fail. They're happy when we don't do what the Lord wants us to do. And we've got to be prepared to act in a way where we're not going to let others down. And we're not going to let the Lord down whenever that day comes. I want us to look at the Exodus story in the Old Testament for a couple of different reasons. When we look at the story of Exodus, we have God actually giving us His will through that story. He's talking to Moses. He's telling us, you know, exactly what He's not liking about this situation, about what He's going to do to solve it. And then we have three different perspectives of people who have to deal with that situation. And we're going to look first at Moses. And from the birth of Moses, you know, we find over in the book of Numbers, Moses is referred to as the meekest man on earth, as the most humble man to walk the face of the earth. And I think he gets that from having such a change in phases in his life. He's born through the mother of a slave, and adopted into the Egyptian royal bloodline. So he goes from being nursed, and there's some, I guess, different schools of thought on how long nursing happened back in that days, but could have been anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5 years old, something like that. And then he goes right into living with his slave mother to growing up in the royal bloodline of the Egyptians. We don't see a lot about his life growing up with the Egyptians in the book of Exodus, but over in Acts chapter 7, when Stephen's given his speech right before he gets stoned, he talks about Moses. Let's flip over there real quick. Acts chapter 7. At this time Moses was born, and he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and his deeds. So when they took him in, as, you know, a son of the Pharaoh's daughter, he had entered basically the Egyptian royal bloodline. He went through the schools. He was taught in all the ways of the Egyptians and was powerful in their wisdom at that time. And so as he turns 40 years old and he goes out and sees the Hebrew or the slave being beaten by the Egyptian, and he slays the Egyptian, he has to flee for his life. It gets out, and Pharaoh learns of this act that he's committed against his own people. And when you think about it, you know, they know that he's Hebrew. There's no question about that. Pharaoh knows who he is. And if they've been growing him, you know, teaching him possibly to hold some type of high office among the Egyptians, and he's going to do things to take the sides of the Hebrews, which is exactly what they're trying to defeat, is the Hebrews overcoming them. It's a threat to have him maintain that stance within the Egyptians. And so Pharaoh's going to have him killed if he can get his hands on him. But Moses is able to flee, and he flees into a wilderness, into the land of Midian. And he goes from being a part of a royal bloodline to being a shepherd, shepherding a flock in the wilderness of, you know, some lowly farm folk, a son of a high priest. For 40 years, he's there and serving the Lord in that capacity. He goes from one extreme to the other. And one day he happens along this burning bush, and I don't think anybody could ever be prepared for that. You know, you come up and it's this miraculous thing that's taking place, and Moses acts like anybody would, just, you know, in awe and wonder about what's happening here. And God talks to him, and he's faced with this spiritual event God asked him to do. And I actually gave a lesson on this about 6 months ago, this small portion of the story of Exodus where Moses is talking to God through the burning bush. And I've thought a lot about it since then. You know, it's really five instances where God and Moses go back and forth, and Moses is kind of making excuses. And really the first four of those, you know, are legitimate excuses. I mean, if you were asked, you know, through some type of miraculous sign, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but if you haven't, do it right now. God comes to you in a way that's unexplainable, that there's no way it could be anything else other than God. And he tells you to go to Vladimir Putin and tell him that he needs to let his people go, you know, or the ruler of North Korea. You know, there's several terrible men in the world, but those are the two that come to my mind at the moment. You know, who are we to go talk to a leader of that capacity and tell him, hey, you need to let a majority of the people that you're currently ruling over right now go? You know, I mean, the Egyptians at that time, Pharaoh was afraid of them, and that's why he afflicted them and made them slaves and things like that. But at the same time, that was his workforce. You know, that was everything that he was commanding at that point. He loses a lot of power if he loses his Egyptians. And Moses says, you know, who am I to do this task? And God reassures him, and I'm not going to go through all of them there, but everything he comes up with, you know, he can't speak well, things like that, God reassures him. And, you know, the last one, he probably goes a little too far and just says, I don't want to go, send someone else, and he gets scolded for that. You know, I'm sure I'd get much worse if I was in that situation. But, you know, after that, Moses, you don't really see much. Like, there's a couple of times in that story where after Pharaoh makes the work harder for the Egyptians, after the first time he goes and appeals to him for the Lord to let the people go, he does go back and question and say, Lord, why did you have me come here just to make the work of these people more, you know? But that's not really in opposition. He's just asking a question. I mean, from this point on, Moses is on board. He got a call from God, and he answered that call. And you'll see, at least throughout the parting of the Red Sea, Moses is 100% ready to do the will of God and answers every call he gives him. Another perspective I want to look at from this story is from that of Pharaoh. And I guess a couple of Pharaohs. So the first Pharaoh that we read about is not the same one that's in place when Moses goes back to address the people. But the first Pharaoh we read about instantly is, you just see that he is such an evil man and self-centered and only caring for his power and his earthly status. And he sees that the Hebrews are being blessed by God. They're multiplying so much. And I'm going to talk about that more here in a little bit. So I don't want to go into that right now. But he sees the blessings that the Lord has given these people. And he knows that, you know, if they decide to, you know, join with another country, if they go to war or something like that, or just simply take over Pharaoh by themselves, like, they can do it. They've got the manpower and they've got the blessings from God. They'd be able to do that. And so he instantly, what comes to his mind is, I have to enslave these people. You know, I mean, lots of different ways you could deal with that. Enslaving them is just such an evil way, you know, concept to come across in order to accomplish this task he's trying to accomplish. And you also have to think, too, that one thing that I want us to have in our mind when we're thinking about Pharaoh is that he's probably never even heard of God, much less been instructed on, you know, how to worship and all these different things. So this is a total new concept to him whenever Moses comes to him. Probably the most thought about phrase when we think of the Pharaoh of Egypt and the Exodus is the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. There's a lot of debate on what that means. It's actually referred to in about three different terms. Flip over here. So when we read through, if you was to read through and just write down every time you heard it, sometimes it would tell you that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. Sometimes it would say that Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And then it would say that Pharaoh hardened his own heart. So it's kind of, it's a few different ways that it uses that term. But basically, I think what all that boils down to is just the characteristic of who Pharaoh is. God doesn't harden Pharaoh's heart in the sense that he made it to where no matter what Pharaoh thought or no matter what Pharaoh wanted to do, he wasn't going to allow Pharaoh to do the right thing. That's not what that term means. What he's saying is God acted the way God acted, and because of the characteristic of Pharaoh, his heart was hardened. So whenever God put a punishment out, instead of, as we're told as Christians, take that chastisement, you know, as a betterment for ourselves, it angered him that he was being punished. You know what I mean? Like, that was the hardening that we see. It's that, it's almost like breaking a horse. You know, a horse is going to fight back for so long, but eventually gives in. Well, Pharaoh's not going to give in. Even though he's going to go through these miraculous, horrible events, he's not going to break. And that's the hardening of his heart that we read about. The first time Moses goes to Pharaoh and he talks to him and kind of lays it out, lets him know that the Lord came to him and he's sending this message that he needs to let his people go. And he shows him, Pharaoh asked him, he says, show me a sign from your God that your God is who your God is. And so that's when Aaron throws down the rod, he turns into a snake. Well, Pharaoh has his magicians there ready to counteract what he sees. You know, and I don't know how that played out, but apparently Pharaoh is going to use that as a crutch for the first couple of signs there. Also, when it comes to turning the Nile to blood, it says that Pharaoh's Egyptians did the same thing. Well, after that, Pharaoh's Egyptians ran out of things to do. And, you know, I mean, it became just obvious that God is appealing to Pharaoh and trying to show him his might and show him his powers and show him who he really is. And Pharaoh just won't accept it. He won't allow himself to succumb to the authority of another, because he feels that he is the all authority on this earth. And there are people that feel that way today. You know, like they are not going to succumb to an authority, regardless of if it's God or, you know, the authorities that are on this earth. They're just not going to do it. You know, it even gets to one part where the servants of Pharaoh are appealing to him. This is after the storm came and the hail destroyed everything. And his servants tell him, they say, Pharaoh, why won't you let these people go? Can't you see that Egypt is destroyed? Like, it is literally coming apart from underneath him, and he doesn't care. His own people are appealing to him and trying to get him to let the Hebrew people go, and he just won't do it. Right after that's when the locusts come, and what little bit it says the hail didn't destroy, the locusts eat up. Then you have darkness and the death of the firstborn. We never want to let ourselves get to the point to where Pharaoh is in this story, to where we've allowed our life and the way that we live our life get in front of spirituality to the point to where we can't turn back to it. And that's what I see here as the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. He can't turn to God because he's lived the life that he's lived so long. He just can't exist any other way. He's not going to let the Lord break him. The third perspective I want us to take a look at is the Hebrew people themselves, or the Israelites. And their portion in this story starts off as being exceedingly blessed by the Lord. You read in the end of the book of Genesis, where 70 of the family of Israel go into Egypt. And I guess it takes about 430 years. But that 70 turns into somewhere in between probably 3 and 5 million. It says that 600,000 men are led out of Egypt whenever they get delivered. And so that's not counting women and children, possibly grandparents. You think of average of a family of four, you know, plus just the fact that they're abundantly growing, they probably have more than that. It would have to be at least 3 or more million. And they're in this state of being blessed by the Lord, and somehow they allow themselves to get enslaved by the Egyptians. And, you know, the Lord, once they get enslaved, he hears their cries, and that's the whole point, the whole start of this story. And when Moses first comes to the elders and tells them what's happening and shows them the sign, they believe. They see it. They see the signs of God. They believe he's going to save them. And right after that, Moses goes to Pharaoh. Pharaoh doesn't let them go, and he increases their work. And what do? They forget all about that, and they're ready to give up at that point. They're ready to say, you know what, it's bad here, but we don't want it to get any worse. Let's just leave things be. Let's just leave it as it is. And good thing we've got the God that we've got, right? Because he's going to do what he says he's going to do regardless of how we think that's going to play out, how we want it to happen. God's going to do what he promises that he's going to do. And we can always count on that. We can always be reassured of that. And so Moses doesn't stop, and God doesn't stop, and we go through all of the all of the miracles here, and Pharaoh finally lets them go. And you better believe they're happy at that point, right? They're finally getting out of there, and they actually plunder the Egyptians as they leave. So they're leaving with all of their livestock, numerous amounts of treasures of gold and silver and all that. And so they're leaving, you know, on their high horse, I guess you put it that way. And shortly after that, you know, you can only imagine the turmoil that Pharaoh and all the Egyptians are in. So they decide to come after him for vengeance or whatever. And they get to the Red Sea, and they see the armies coming after them. And what do the people do? Why have you led us here just to be destroyed? You know, they're giving up again. Like they can't keep faith in the Lord here. And it's really just, I'm sure that it's not as different as I think it would be. But, you know, we have the Bible today, and people say that having the Bible is better than experiencing a miracle. Because you've got everything. You've got all the miracles. You've got everything to lead you into heaven and the righteousness of God and everything. But man, wouldn't it be great to see some of those miracles? I mean, I don't know how they could turn so quickly when, you know, their livestock are alive and the Egyptians lose them all, you know? Or if you just think about it, you know, these flies are so many that you can't see the ground. But it ain't bothering them one bit, you know? Like, that may sound silly, but that's huge, you know? And, you know, whenever the Nile was turned to blood, it wasn't just the water in the Nile. All the pots in the city, like every bit of water that could be found in Egypt, was blood. You can't fake something like that, you know? Like, I can't fathom how they could turn so quickly from believing in the Lord. But nonetheless, it happened. And as we all know, the Lord saved them. Moses departed the Red Sea. And they escaped with their lives, and Pharaoh and all of his armies died. Trying to put this into some application for today. Just like we don't see the miracles, God doesn't talk to us like he talked to Moses in the times of the Exodus. We have to search him. We're given the Bible. We have access to all the knowledge and wisdom and learning of the fear of the Lord. I don't think Pharaoh ever feared the Lord the way that leads to salvation. I don't know how that's possible. I don't know how his heart was hardened that much. But that's something we have to learn. And we have to diligently seek him in order to find it. And to be prepared to face the situations that we're going to face in this world. I just hope that we are prepared and we are ready to face those when that time comes. That concludes my lesson this evening. At this time, we'll stand and sing the song of invitation.